On today's episode of It's Always Something in Philadelphia, Alec and I will wrap up the Philadelphia Eagles 2020-2021 NFL season, a season that most of us would like to forget, but likely will not be able to due to a multitude of reasons, one of those reasons being the obvious tank job orchestrated by Doug Peterson on Sunday evening against the Washington football team. We're going to get into that as well as the ripple effects it will have for the organization as they head into what is likely to be a very tumultuous offseason. And then we're going to get into the 6-1 Philadelphia 76ers. That's right. Your 76ers lead the NBA with the best record at 6-1. They are alone with that title. We're going to get into the early season success as well as some of the factors we think have led to that. And we're going to have some fun with the Sixers because in past few seasons, we have not been able to have pure, uncut fun with the Sixers. So we're just going to let it fly with them. Positive vibes are going to be flowing. And we're definitely going to need that after what happened on Sunday night. So all that and more ahead on It's Always Something in Philadelphia. Something in Philadelphia, along with Alec Leipsch. As always, my name is Kenny Adkins. And Alec, I think I would be remiss if I didn't mention this. I think we have to bring this up. It's something that not only are the fans in Philadelphia talking about, but everyone in the whole sporting world has been discussing this. Everyone and their mother has an opinion on this. Whether it's the right or wrong opinion has yet to be revealed. But I feel that we have to address this. Last week's episode, I called my shot. I said Jackie Bradley Jr. would be a Philly by the next time you heard our voices. And I regret to inform you fine people that that was not correct. So I just wanted to, you know, say hand up, apologize. I know, you know, you guys expect better of me. And, you know, as Andy Reid would say, we got to do a better job.
Very honorable of you to take on this blame so early in the pod, too.
Yeah, you know what? It's all about accountability. It's all about accountability. I got to let the people know that I'm there for them. So I won't call my shot again until I know it's something that I almost cannot possibly be wrong about. But anyway, there's nothing to talk about with the Phillies, so we're not going to mention them. They don't deserve mentioning this week. What does deserve mentioning is the Eagles season is finally over. That was maybe the worst 17 weeks ever. Sunday night, Eagles had a primetime game against the Washington football team, a game that had quite a bit of implications for the playoff landscape going into the 2020-2021 playoffs. With a win, the football team would be in. With a loss, the Giants would be in after they had defeated the Cowboys earlier in the day. The Eagles, in a three-point game early in the fourth quarter, pulled Jalen Hurts and put in Nate Sudfeld, and that went about as well as we all expected. It was a pretty obvious tank job in order to secure a better draft pick for the Eagles, and people were upset about it, to say the least. Everybody had an opinion. Alec, what is your opinion on it?
My opinion is the Eagles did what's best for their organization. The only reason I think this is an issue at all is because it maligned a New York media, a New York market. Like, the Giants we're not allowed to – they didn't win the division because the Eagles decided to tank this game. But the Pittsburgh Steelers also, like, didn't try for the entire second half on Sunday against Cleveland. The Jacksonville Jaguars haven't been trying the whole year. The New York Jets only started trying for the last 3 weeks. So I don't really get why this is an issue now, except for the fact that it's a Sunday night game against a New York – affecting a New York team.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you make about the New York market, because when the Jets won a game a few weeks back, the entire, like, sports world made fun of them for winning a game, for doing what everybody claims is so important about the sport and only ever playing to win. They won a game, and everybody made fun of them because that likely took them out of the sweepstakes for Trevor Lawrence. So it just feels somewhat hypocritical that the Eagles are getting as chastised as they are, especially when you consider they literally had nothing to play for except a better slot in the draft. With a win, the Eagles would have been picking at 9. After they lost, they moved up to the 6th spot, and so they will have the 6th overall pick in the coming draft. I don't know. I mean, I think it's kind of funny to see all the Giants people on Twitter being, you know, absurdly upset about it when, you know, they won 6 games. One of the losses they had was to this Eagles team, and they were up 2 scores, you know, midway through the 4th quarter. So if they have anybody to blame, it's themselves. There's one way to not have to rely on the Eagles to do something for you, then I would probably suggest taking matters into your own hands and winning games. But, it you know, it was the best move for them to do in order to get that 6th pick. It just was a little it was a little sketchy the way it all worked out. And I just remember watching it on Sunday night and not being excited going into the game because I knew which way I was rooting for it to end up. It was just a weird circumstance. And then obviously with them being in the game and then you get all wrapped up in the emotion and then Sudfeld comes in and looks atrocious and then you kind of understand what's going on. It was just a strange dynamic. And I think a lot of people within the Eagles organization are pretty upset with Doug Peterson for the way he handled it. This week, we actually put out a tweet asking for mailbag submissions. We asked people to send us questions. We had a few responses, so thank you to everybody who responds. We're going to do this every week so you guys can help curate the kind of content we have on the pod. But this is a question from Will Price. Shout out to Will. He has a pod of his own. Give him a little plug here. Check out Price is Right Pod. It's a good friend of mine. His question was, were Doug's antics, in all quotes, last night enough to get him out of Philadelphia? The team came out saying they're committed to him earlier this week. Does this change everything? Alec, obviously they came out prior to the game and said that Doug Peterson would be returning as well as Howie Roseman. Do you think the way that Sunday night went down and unfolded and the reactions to it will play any role in that maybe changing?
My default answer is no, because the Eagles organization for several years now has valued accomplishments and merit. And Doug Peterson does have merit here, even after a terrible one season. He has been a successful coach here. He literally won a Super Bowl. He's won multiple playoff games outside of that Super Bowl. So it's like he has merit to stay here. And I think that Jeffrey Lurie is taking a holistic look at this and saying like one bad season in a pandemic isn't necessarily fair against him, especially if the decline of Carson Wentz isn't his fault and all the injuries that have happened these past years are not his fault, which I could also agree with considering how much investment was in older players and the lack of young guys. So I can see where he's coming from. It's just like for the fans, obviously it's like very enraging.
Yeah, I would have said that I don't think Sunday night's result would change anything. But after the game, you know, immediately following and then the next day, some pretty shocking reports came out about reactions of players on the sidelines, reactions of people around the league. And it sounded like the players knew what the game plan was going into week 17. And Doug reiterated that in his post-game press conference where he mentioned that his plan was to get Nate Sudfeld some playing time. And I think a lot of the players were kind of surprised when, you know, he didn't deviate from that plan at all, even though they knew, you know, the fix was kind of up. When he didn't deviate from that plan at all, when they found themselves, you know, only down 3 in what was a pretty winnable game. So I think likely it doesn't affect much. But I also think that that's going to have an effect on, you know, the locker room situation going forward. We've kind of talked about Doug in the past that he's, you know, one of his strengths is within the locker room, it seems. And it seems to be a decent motivator. But, you know, if he, you know, seemingly in these players' eyes betrayed them, then that's going to be something that sticks around with him during his tenure in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it was that bad that he chose to, you know, throw the game when he did. I think he could have done a better job of communicating his intents to the players, But the trouble with that is if you go into the locker room before the game or the week leading up, and you're like, yo, I'm treating this like a preseason game. I'm going to get Nate Sudfeld some reps. Then like the players can be like, why am I even here? Why would Zach Ertz, his possible last game as an Eagle, why would he go out and give 100%? Why did they pick and choose which starters were benched before the game even started? The execution, I feel, was not ideal, but the idea of what they were doing wasn't wrong.
Yeah, I agree with you. I value, as I'm sure a lot of people do, I value three spots in the draft, especially when talking about the top 10, a lot greater than, you know, a meaningless win at the end of the season. But I do agree that they could have executed the tank a little bit better. Whether that, you know, means he should have either started Nate Sudfeld in the game and let Jalen Hurts rest and avoid potential injury, or put him in a little bit sooner, you know, maybe started the second half with Sudfeld. It wouldn't have been as glaring and as obvious, but I think they did the right thing. It's just a matter of whether or not he executed it as well as he could have. And I think it's a tough spot to be in because he's probably getting organizational direction from the front office that's what they want him to do. I'm almost sure that was the case, but you know, the fact of the matter is they were trying to lose that game. And I think most people were aware of it. And obviously it's tough to get the guys on the field who are actually playing the game to be, you know, on board with that. But ultimately they did what was in the best interest of the organization, and I think that they're going to be in better shape because of it, if they can, you know, kind of navigate these potential issues that might arise afterwards.
Yeah, that's another indicator is that Peterson is returning, is that he instituted this tank move. Most coaches, if they know that one foot's out the door already or that they could potentially be fired, they definitely do not do what he did on Sunday.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, if he had any sort of inkling that he was not going to be back, that he was not secure in his job, I don't think he would have gone out that way at all. I think he would have played the best possible lineup he could have. I think he would have had not all of his starters, obviously, but as many starters as he could have out there, and he would have gone out swinging. So I think, you know, that's a good point you make there, because it definitely gives fans a little bit more of an indication that he likely is coming back regardless of what happened on Sunday. And you posed an interesting question to me the other night. And I think it's pretty valid, because it looks like that's where they are in the current situation. The past few weeks, we've been hearing different reports about Carson Wentz being unhappy. Some of them have been disputed, and then some of them have been doubled down on. And the one report that came out this week was that he views his relationship with Doug Peterson as, quote, fractured. And then he also would be willing to work with the Eagles in order to facilitate a trade. Likely will have to move some of his contract money around. I don't know if they can convert it into bonuses or what, but he's willing to work with the Eagles to facilitate a trade elsewhere, which means he's likely not interested in playing for Doug Peterson and or competing for a backup role, or, you know, competing for a spot at all. He, you know, maybe he views himself as a starting quarterback, which whether he should or should not is a different question. But do you think going forward, if the Eagles had to choose one and that they could salvage either relationship, should they choose Carson or Doug?
Anyone's answer to this question depends on how you view Carson Wentz. And I view Wentz in the mold of what he did after the Super Bowl season, 2018 and 19, somewhere in that range. So like maybe in the 10 to 15 range of like among all QBs in the league kind of thing. So if he can be a top 15 QB at least, I think he adds more value than Doug Peterson does. I think just based on that, and also getting like trading him is going to be a lot harder than it's made out to be, even outside of like the $30 million hit that the Eagles would incur if they trade him after a certain date. There's just a lot. Like, there's only so many teams who are going to be looking for a quarterback, and there's only so many who are going to bet on Wentz. And also, whoever trades for him is probably going to have draft pick protections if Wentz gets hurt. If he doesn't play a certain amount, there's definitely going to be stipulations in whatever the agreement is. So it's going to be a lot harder to trade him than you think. And you can very easily talk yourself into Wentz getting back to some like percentage of his MVP self with a new coach.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is going to be a lot more challenging than people consider, or not just because of, you know, the staggering size of his contract, but also the fact that teams know that the Eagles really don't have much leverage in this situation. Just based off of everything that's gone public, they know that he has been vocal about, you know, not wanting to be here. And whether the reports are accurate or not, there's certainly a pretty legitimate narrative there. And, you know, whether you agree with him or not in his feelings towards the team and the way that they handled his situation, it doesn't change the fact that he is hurting his trade value in a way by being so open and so obvious with wanting to be traded, because then the teams know that the Eagles are going to be looking to get off the contract, first of all, but they also are looking to trade an unhappy player, so they're going to be more willing to take lower offers, likely, especially when you factor in his injury history. So it'll definitely be interesting to see what they do with the Wentz situation moving forward, whether they really view Jalen Hurts as the solution. I think Wentz is likely to be traded, and I feel confident with rolling into year two of Hurts and actually building the offense around him. Because you have to remember, sometimes he underperformed this season, but he was playing in an offense that was built around Carson Wentz, built around Carson Wentz, we say, with heavy sarcasm.
Yeah, you better watch yourself there.
Because, you know, we see the way that offense worked. But so it'll be interesting to see if they view Wentz or Hurts as the guy. Their names are so similar. I don't know why. They're not similar, but it's consonant, vowel, consonant, Z and or S. And they just –
it's because the end, yeah.
They just flow off the tongue very, very similarly. I feel like I'm going to do that for the rest of my life. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see if Hurts will be the guy going forward, or if the Eagles, with that 6 overall pick, please nobody get angry with me, but in a draft that's pretty loaded with quarterback talent, end up making a move at 6 to get another quarterback if they're not sold on Hurts. Like we mentioned, the Eagles move up from 9 to 6, and they are in a position to draft a pretty high-impact player. Birdo Joe asked us on the mailbag, he said, how many draft picks will the Eagles end up with in rounds 1 through 3? So we obviously already mentioned the first pick, the 6th overall. They will have one pick in the second round, one pick in the third. We traded our 4th round pick for Eagles legend Jannard Avery. So that was a fun time. And then we have 2 5th round picks. One of them is from Dallas last year. We moved back 18 spots, and we got their 2021 fifth rounder. So we have that. Then we have a 6th rounder and 7th rounder. We'll get into what we want a little bit with the 6th overall pick just briefly. But I just want to say, if we only hit on one pick, I hope it's that Dallas 5th rounder.
Can't disagree with that, although you would like it to be the 6th overall pick to be the hit, because that's highest upside. But to answer Joe's question, it comes down to if they're going to trade down in the early rounds, because that would get you an extra pick. And that is dependent on how the top of the board goes and how the QBs go, and if the Eagles are involved with any of those, because chances are, if they actually want a top QB from this class, they actually might have to trade up. I don't think they're going to do that. I think the more likely scenario is trade down. So I'll say that they end up with 4 picks in rounds 1 to 3.
I can just see the Eagles trading down from that 6th spot after what just transpired on Sunday, and just the way that it would be received. because you know, this whole time we've been saying that was done for that reason specifically. And then whether it's a good move or not, it still is kind of a weird look. I think they'll probably stay with 6. The big board has a lot of guys that are likely going to be there at 6 that could definitely be high-impact players for the Eagles, whether it's a Jamar Chase, Devontae Smith, a Micah Parsons linebacker. I think that's a positional need the Eagles have that not a lot of people are addressing, because everyone's kind of focused on the wide receiver. I really hope that they don't go quarterback just for the sake of some sort of stability. You know, we need to actually know who's going to be the quarterback, you know, as we come into the next season. I hope so. And if we bring in another guy who's going to compete with Hurts, and there's just going to be a lot of disparity between them and the way the offense is supposed to run. So I did see a mock draft the other day that had the Eagles drafting one Trey Lance, quarterback from North Dakota State University. And I just think that would be a very fitting end, whether I would agree with it or not, it would be a very fitting end to the Carson Wentz era if it were to come to an end.
Stop it. Stop.
Let's hope it doesn't go there. What else do I have? The Eagles also restructured a few pretty large contracts in Alshon Jeffrey and Malik Jackson. Alshon, if you remember a few seasons ago, he had his contract fully guaranteed, just another brilliant Howie Roseman move for the remainder of it. And I don't know exactly the restructuring they did, but it seems like it makes their contracts a little more doable, as well as a little more manageable if they were to decide to move on from one or both of those players.
Yeah, I believe it's either they extended the deadline or lowered the guarantees for next season for both of them. It looks like Malik Jackson especially is going to be cap casualty. They're probably going to either release him or try to trade him just for the simplicity of his the third defensive tackle being worth as much as being paid as much as he is just not feasible, especially with how much they've invested in the defensive line over the past few years. O-line and D-line both, but definitely D-line. And with Alshon Jeffrey, I don't know, because he's actually like a solid fit with Jalen Hurts. So maybe that depends on which QB's here.
Yeah, I mean, with him, the past few seasons, it's been whether or not he can stay on the field or not. He is obviously old. He's not very fast, so he's more of a physical jump ball, 50-50 ball type receiver. And that skill set doesn't always age very well with certain guys. So we'll see what they do with him. Malik Jackson, very disappointing, you know, his Eagles tenure. He was the biggest signing a few off seasons ago and obviously got hurt early on in that season and then hasn't really been much of a factor after that. But, yeah, we'll see what they do with those two. As for the 2020 season, I feel like we should play the song where it's like, looks like we made it. Look how far we've come, my baby. Just to ring this one out. If you could describe the 2020 season in one word, one or two words, what would you pick?
Kind of throw me on the spot here. As a writer, I got to think of the right word here.
Break out the thesaurus.
Uninspiring. Not disappointing because it, you know, a lot of these things have been building up for years. The Eagles' overall organizational hubris that they think that they can just bet on themselves consistently after winning a Super Bowl and continuing to invest in the older players such as Darren Sproles when he's borderline eligible for AARP, or continuing to bet that Jason Kelce will once again limp back to the team after mulling retirement multiple times, which, by the way, I hope he does and he gets out of football because he's a great guy and he could do much better things for society than that. And the Eagles have just been, you know, betting on their own successes. They've been doubling down on all that kind of stuff. So, and nothing about what Howie Roseman has said or Doug Peterson has said has really made me, you know, feel differently about how the season went.
Yeah, I think I would have to go with reckoning because it seems like, kind of like you mentioned, all of the poor decisions in the past have kind of really begun to rear their ugly head this season. And a lot of the flaws of the roster construction over the past few seasons, especially following the Super Bowl, really came to a head this season, you know, with guys being ineffective due to age or poor contract structure. So this season was really just about kind of realizing that the team is not in a great place moving forward. And certainly wasn't in a great place coming into this season. But it's time to kiss it goodbye. Don't have to watch them on Sundays anymore, which will be nice. I would like to officially announce my Buffalo Bills fandom for the upcoming playoffs. I'm a big Bills guy. I'm a big Josh Allen fan, and I think they're the most fun team to watch in the NFL. So I will be supporting the Buffalo Bills. Alec, do you have a team in the playoffs that you are rooting for?
Probably the Chiefs, just because they're the most fun. Really, if I were to pick an underdog, the Browns, because they've been they tanked for a while, and obviously I'm a pro-tanking person, if you couldn't tell already. And they've also been hit really hard by COVID recently, with a lot of their players hitting the list. So they're like mega underdogs now.
Yeah, and especially, you know, playing against the Steelers in week one or round one of the playoffs, that's obviously a huge rivalry. So that'll be fun to see. But yeah, so 4-11-1. That should the Eagles memoriam, 4-11-1. And you know what? I am done talking about the Eagles until next week when we talk about something dumb they did anyway. Let's move on to the Sixers. They'll be fun. The Sixers, like we mentioned in the intro, 6-1. How about it? They are the NBA's best record. They are flowing offensively, staggering defensively. They are one of the highest-rated defensive teams in the league. The offense seems to be seamless sometimes. Joel Embiid is playing like an MVP. Tobias Harris is playing like a borderline MVP candidate, you could say. Maybe not an MVP, but somebody who's at least worth $180 million. I think I've said this the first week of every NBA season for the past 3 years or so, but I love this team. Well, not last season. I didn't say last season. But this season, I love this team.
It's funny how you didn't say it last season, because they were actually 5-0 to start last season. But yes, this team has the best record in the league. Like Kenny said in the intro, they have the second best net rating overall. And the trio of Embiid, Tobias Harris, and Ben Simmons has a plus 24 net rating together. And that is per the Sixers general manager, president of basketball ops himself, Daryl Morey, who tweeted this last night in a response to The Athletic's Derek Bodner. He called them the Holy Trinity, so now that's not going to stop anytime soon. Seth Curry can't miss. He has a 71% effective field goal percentage, and for reference, good for a guard at that metric is 50%, so that tells you all you need to know there. Tobias Harris is making quick decisions. He's either shooting off that you're immediately driving or immediately making the next read instead of probing the mid-range and taking like 6 seconds to make something happen. And Joel Embiid trusts these guys to make shots off of his post-ups. Like someone will come and double team. Now granted, he has not played the best opponents recently. His toughest center matchup is probably Aaron Baines against the Raptors, but he posts up, draws a double team, immediately kicks it out to the right guy, and the offense keeps flowing until there's a mismatch somewhere. And it's honestly just like, it's relaxing to watch a good offense.
It really is. I mean, that's the one thing that I've noticed the most this season watching the first 7 games, is that aside from the Cavs game, which is an outlier, and Embiid didn't play, obviously, so they're going to struggle, it's just fun to watch. I mean, I don't know if it's them being able to shoot threes at an above-average clip, or it's actually watching a basketball team know how to space the floor. But they are—I mean, they are just really, really fun right now. And you mentioned they haven't played the best caliber of opponents, and I agree with that. But I think what you have to consider is, in years past, when Sixers were to play, you know, lower-level teams, they would sometimes play down to their opponents, and they've just been waxing the floor with teams this year. I mean, the game is out of reach heading into the fourth quarter most of the time. They're able to rest Embiid almost the whole fourth quarter, which is huge. I mean, he's playing like 28 minutes, 25 minutes some games. Like, he is really getting a lot of rest. The bench unit is really, really, really successful at not always just maintaining a lead when Embiid goes to the bench, but sometimes extending a lead. You look at the play with guys like Tyrese Maxey, Shake Milton, who I have my Shake Milton jersey on the way, by the way. They're just a completely different team in terms of identity than years past. And I don't know. I mean, their style of play seems like it's pretty sustainable, especially when you factor in the fact that they are still, you know, pretty staggering defensively.
Yeah, the defense is the part that makes this all encouraging, because defense is generally one of the things that stays consistent no matter where or who you play. I will say that Seth Curry's ridiculous shooting clip right now, where he's shooting 50% overall from three, that's that's not going to keep up. I'm sorry. Joel Embiid is shooting a ridiculous clip from like long twos at mid range. Obviously my favorite shot for anyone who knows. I'm just kidding. He's not going to keep hitting them at that clip, but everything he's doing, there's nothing that these guys are doing that seems like, wow, this is going to stop. It's just that they're probably going to go in a little less often. But at the same time, Shake Milton's not hitting a great clip from three right now. The bench unit it stands to get better, especially when Furkan Korkmaz returns from his injury. It's possible that those a slump that Tobias Harris goes through is counteracted by a Korkmaz jump or – there's a lot of encouraging signs with this team, even after I said last week that I would absolutely do Simmons for Harden. I stand by that, but this team right now is on fire.
Yeah, we need to stop recording after bad losses because that – what was the title of our episode last week, Sports Are Bad?
Like yeah, that was, it's
– we were in a dark place after that Cavs loss, but they look fantastic. Tobias Harris is playing like the best offensive player on the floor, which is really refreshing to see, especially considering he's being paid $180 million. You mentioned Joel Embiid being able to pass out of double teams. That's one of the things that you definitely could use as a knock against him in years past. But it also, you know, stands to reason that it likely was because he didn't trust the guys that he was passing to. I mean, you know, Nowadays, he passes out of a double team, and it seems like he's getting double teamed on every single possession. But he passes out, and he knows, you know, one or two passes after that, somebody's getting a shot up, and it's got a pretty good chance of going in when you see the guys he's playing on the floor with. Seth Curry is having a career year in terms of averages for a few different statistics. And then I can't believe we haven't mentioned this yet. Ben Simmons hit a three last week, and – Dwight Howard hit a three in the same game. When you have 2,000-point three-point shooters or 1,000-percentage, 100% three-point shooters on your team, you're going to win a lot of games.
That's definitely true. And the one starter we haven't even mentioned is Danny Green, which is definitely a good thing for anyone who doesn't know Danny Green because if he's in the spotlight, there's often something wrong, kind of like the Robert Covington era, where he was either in the spotlight because he was missing a ton of threes or there was a defensive miscue that got caught on tape. So if Danny Green's low maintenance and he's out of the picture, then things are going all right. But he might miss some time because it looked like he jammed his finger last night. But overall, really good start for the starting lineup. Simmons, shooters, and Embiid seems to work.
Yeah, you know – they kind of took a leap of faith in that roster construction. Not any of us were really sure if, you know, letting Embiid and Simmons spread out and have guys around them that could make shots and do things other than layup was going to work. But Daryl knows better than we do. It's crazy that the Sixers' former front office spent years just completely fumbling serious assets with no idea of what to do. And then Daryl Morey comes in. He's like, yeah, you know what? Give me like 2.5 hours. I can figure this thing out. And he's got them playing better than they've played since, well, at least the start of season since 2000, 2001. You mentioned Danny Green. He was pretty abysmal kind of the first few games of the season. He's just such a streaky shooter, but he seems to have found it a little bit more. I think that was partially him kind of assimilating into the offense and finding his role and seeing what he needed to do. So he's certainly found a little bit. He's getting more confident with his quick trigger. You think – so if he misses time, do you think they would start Shake?
Yeah, probably. I would think that they have to because one reason that looks more comfortable is because Tyrese Maxey looks like a real NBA player and a possible lead ball handler. So you can somewhat feel comfortable with him being the backup ball handler and letting Milton start. Yeah, I think that's definitely a look. It's possible that when Korkmaz returns, either him or Matisse Thybulle could insert into that spot if that overlaps with Danny Green's absence. But yeah, I think Shake is the favorite to start.
Yeah, Shake's been good. Maxey has been. He's unbelievable. I mean, I don't know the last time I've seen a Sixer look more NBA ready in their NBA season, in their NBA debut. Maybe Ben Simmons, maybe Joel, but obviously they had time prior, missed due to injury before they actually came to the league. Tyrese Maxey came in and just immediately looked super comfortable. he can dribble around anybody. He gets to the rack at will. We talked about it a few weeks ago, but that floater that he has, that little running jump shot he hits consistently is a really elite skill to have at such a young age, because that's a shot that's never going to leave him. He is really, really, really fun to watch. I can't believe he fell to 21 overall. Usually things like that do not go our way, but it's finally, it's nice to get one.
Yeah. It's also nice that he's a guard who can, dribble and shoot. Those have also been a rarity. I'm going to keep making that bit the whole season.
I didn't know that was allowed. I didn't know the Sixers were allowed to have those players.
Nor I, but, Maxey also took his first career free throw last night. He was off an and-one in transition off of a steal. He's also, like, very good defensively, which is one of the things that was expected to translate of his right away. His three-pointer is coming around, although I'm not a fan of his footwork. It's like his one foot, like, leans in front of the other a little bit. But whatever. That'll get worked out over time, hopefully. But the Sixers schedule does get tougher from here on in. They have the Wizards tomorrow, or when you'll be listening to this today, who are not very good, and the Nets the night after that, who are missing Kevin Durant because of COVID contact tracing, Jesus. Then the Denver Nuggets on Saturday, that's probably the toughest matchup of the year to date. Then the Hawks next Monday, and a mini series with the Heat after that. So over the next 10 to 11 days, we'll know a lot more about this team.
Yeah, agreed. There's a large part of me that wishes Kevin Durant was going to be playing. One, because I enjoy watching him play. And two, because I really want to see where the Sixers measure up, especially defensively, against an elite scoring duo in Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Kevin Durant, who's one of the best offensive players the league's ever seen. It's likely that they would put Ben Simmons on him. And I would like to see Simmons in that matchup, see kind of, because, you know, hopefully that would end up maybe being a playoff matchup. So it would be nice to get a little bit of preparation for that, but definitely gives them a better chance to win. The Embiid-Jokic matchup on Saturday will be fun. I know it's early, and I know we're only 7 games into the season, but seeing the way the offense flows, and even at times when it gets a little bit stagnant, they're able to kind of pick back up again, and I think a lot of that has to do with the above-average three-point shooting, but they're able to quickly get back on track. And the way that the defense is just stuffing people. Has your overall outlook on the Sixers' ceiling this year changed at all, or does it remain largely the same, or do you need to just see more?
I would like to see more, but overall, no. I still think that this team is missing a half-court creator. It's just that in most of the matchups, they've kind of been able to get by with Seth Curry as the lead ball handler in the half court. You've seen that a lot, where he'll run a pick and roll or 2-man game with Joel Embiid late in a game when it's sort of close, even though they've blown out everyone. I don't think that that's sustainable in the playoffs, but I do think that Seth has more ball handling than I gave him credit for initially. So for that, I admit that. But no, I still think they need a high level ball handler.
Yeah, Seth Curry, he is a baller, man. I mean, everyone knew about the three-point shooting. I mean, we talked about it extensively. Historically great three-point shooting. But he really, you know, he's able to get to the rim. He's really good in finishing around the rim. And he's really, really good in that two-man game with Joel Embiid. That pick and roll has been working fantastically thus far to start the season. It took him a few games to really get comfortable and kind of know what the other one was going to be doing. But they look really good as tandem. He has been a very, very expected but still pleasant surprise. Also, quick shout out to my boy Paul Reed. B-ball Paul got his first points Monday night against the Hornets. I don't know how much playing time he's going to see this season, but I always like when guys get in and are able to succeed. So the Sixers, they've just become must-watch TV. I mean, years past, I watched almost every single game anyway, but there is very little chance that I'll be missing Sixers games this season just because they're just so fun to watch. And like you said, it's just easy watching. You know, and when the offense is flowing the way it is, when they're not struggling, when Embiid's able to be locked in and, you know, play his heart out, when Ben Simmons is looking good, when Tobias is playing the way he is, Tobias has been unbelievable. they are just really, really fun to watch, and I'm really excited to go forth into this season.
Me too. And whenever the hot shooting of those players falls and we see the Sixers crash down to earth a little bit, even if it's only a little bit, there are moves that can be made. There's plenty of tradable contracts on this roster. There's more assets than there were a few months ago before Daryl Morey got here. There's plenty of options here, and I am more optimistic than I was a week ago.
So what do you think? I don't think this is something we discussed at all. I'm just kind of spitballing here. We kind of played with the idea of joking around that Tobias's contract works in a James Harden trade. Now, likely, they're not going to be able to trade Tobias Harris for James Harden. And I know we've been mentioning that Tobias has been playing at a very highly above average pace. Do you think they could capitalize on him and his performance recently and trade him and his contract for maybe not a Harden-type player, but for a player who fills a different role, maybe that half-court creator role, and kind of sell high on him? Do you think there's any possibility of that?
With all the stuff that Daryl Morey has done for the Rockets and all the stuff he's actually done for the Sixers so far, I'll believe anything, but I don't know who that is. Is Tobias Harris or Bradley Beal is not happening. That's not realistic. I don't really know who else, because like Victor Oladipo has been mentioned a lot, but the Pacers, I don't think they're going to trade Oladipo and something else for Tobias, because that's what it would have to be to make the money work. I can't think of anyone else that would make sense for. I think it's going to be like an aggregation of those middle, like Mike Scott, Tony Bradley, Terrence Ferguson type money.
Yeah, I think it's you know, it's probably wishful thinking on my part. But you know what? Hopefully Tobias plays at a level that we wouldn't want to trade him anyway. But yeah, it's pretty likely that Mike Scott will be in pretty much any trade the Sixers make just for the way his salary falls. All right, you got anything else before we sign off?
No, I'd say your point just now about Tobias is kind of the point of when you sign a player to a max contract. If they're worth that max contract, then you would want them on the team. And if they're not worth it, you can't really trade them either without giving up a lot. So
yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you know, if he's going to be getting paid $180 million, it would be very good for the Sixers if he lived up to that contract. So obviously, you know, as we've said, the season is still young, but there is a lot of excitement around this team, a lot of buzz. The culture seems to have been completely changed. Everybody seems to like each other. We're not getting articles every single week about how Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid hate each other from ESPN or Bleacher Report. So that's refreshing. And it's really nice to go into what looks to be a exciting, successful season after that dumpster fire of a season we just lived through with the Eagles. That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you guys for listening again. Keep an eye out on our Twitter at SomethingPhilly for our next mailbag tweet. We're going to be looking for submissions from anybody about anything. We'll really get it. It doesn't have to be sports related. You guys can ask us crazy stuff within reason, but we will likely answer it. Check us out on alwayssomethingpod.com. We post all of the articles there. We post all of the episodes there. We also post the episodes to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts. Follow me on Twitter at KenTheBen. Follow Alec at AlecNBA. Keep up with us. Interact with us. We love hearing from you guys. And Alec, take us out. What's your message to the nice people?
JJ Redick will be a Sixer again.
Oh, so I called my shot last week. You're calling it this week. Okay. I
guess it's only fair.
Hey, as long as we both keep up the same level of accountability. That's going to do it for us. We will talk to you guys next week. Hopefully Ben Simmons hits another three in that week. Take care.
Peace out.